Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to RD People, Health and Wellbeing conference call to discuss its second quarter of 2018 results. The audio from this conference is being broadcast simultaneously through the internet in the website www.rd.com.br/ir. In that address, you can also find this slideshow presentation available for download. We inform that all the participants will be able to listen to the conference during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are over, there will be a Q&A period. At this time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this conference, please press star zero for an operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements are being made under the Safe Harbor of Securities Litigation Reform Act from 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on beliefs and assumptions of RD management and on information currently available to the company. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of RD and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Today with us are Mr. Marcilio Pousada, CEO, Mr. Eugenio De Zagottis, Investor Relations and Corporate Planning Vice President, and Gabriel Rosenberg, IR and Corporate Planning Director. Now, I will turn the conference over to Mr. Marcilio Pousada. Sir, you may begin your conference.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the presentation of results for the second quarter 2018. As always, Eugenio will present the numbers, and then we'll highlight some next steps. Okay, Eugenio?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the RD conference call. This was a challenging quarter for the company, filled with disappointing revenue growth and the loss of operating leverage, pressuring the mature stores. This has had an effect in our margins. As painful as we think this market has been, we believe that this environment is very important in driving consolidation for the market and making us stronger for the medium and long term. It's important to mention that when you compare us to competitors, and I think the numbers that should be reported by all the drugstore chains and wholesalers on the next quarter, I think they will point that we're still very strong on a relative basis. This environment will position us to keep consolidating the market and driving value creation. We ended the quarter here with more than 1,700 stores. We opened 62 new stores and closed five stores. Gross revenues reached 2.8 billion, 11.6% of growth, and a same-store sales growth of 2.5%. Gross margin amounted to 29.1% of gross revenues, a 30 basis points pressure, mostly because of the lower inflationary gains. Our EBITDA reached 316.6 million. This represents 8.4% of EBITDA margin and an increase of 5.2% in nominal terms. Net income reached 142 million, a net margin of 3.7%, and an increase of nearly 3%. Cash flow amounted to 68 million negative in the quarter. Free cash flow, with a total cash flow of 154 negative. Finally, we entered the state of Pará in this quarter with three stores in Belém. We believe there's a huge opportunity there to fill the gap left by Big Ben, who disappeared from the market. On page four, we can provide more details in terms of store development. We opened 62 stores in the quarter and closed five stores. We maintain a very robust performance for the new store, which is absolutely in line with historical standards. We are reiterating the guidance of 240 new stores, both from this year and from next year. We believe that the challenges that we have, they are conjunctural challenges, they're not structural challenges, and we're still very positive in terms of the expansion. We believe the expansion will remain a major source of value creation for IG. We ended the quarter with 36.2% of stores still in the maturing stage. On page 5, we can provide also details on our geographic footprint. As I was mentioning, I think one of the main highlights here is our entry into Pará with 3 new stores. We have seen great initial results, so we're very optimistic about this market. As Big Ben closed all stores, and Big Ben was the leader and best operator in the state, we believe there's a huge gap to be filled, and we think we have a great chance at doing that. We have 20 other locations already signed, and we're still looking for more stores here. We ended the period here in Sao Paulo with a total of 926 stores. Here in the bottom of the page, we highlight how our growth strategy, which was hugely concentrated in Sao Paulo until the end of 2015, started becoming more decentralized since 2016. So in the second quarter of 2016, we had opened 125 stores in the States out of a total of 196 stores. So nearly 2/3 of the stores were in the state of Sao Paulo. So quarter by quarter, the number of new openings in Sao Paulo has fallen down, and new openings in other states has gone up. So in this quarter, when you look on a last 12-month basis, only about 1/3 of the stores were open in the states. 2/3 were open in other markets. So this is a decentralization that comes as a result of the fact that we have a true national platform in which we make money on a very consistent basis in every market in the country. We are the only chain in Brazil who can claim to have a national profitable presence. Nobody else can say that. All the other chains, they make money in their native locations, the native regions, but when you look the expansion, they don't make money in virtually any region. For us, we have a full national platform, which we have been taking advantage for the last 2 years. This is not a quick fix as a response to increased competition for Paulo, which is indeed happening. This is a strategy that has been unfolding for 2 years. When you look at the market share, we gained 10 bps on a national basis and lost 80 bps in Sao Paulo. We believe one of the explanations for the share loss in Sao Paulo is exactly the growth decentralization. According to IMS, in the second quarter of 2016, we are opening, our expansion share was 10.9% in Sao Paulo, meaning of every new stores open, 11% of them belong to us. Now, this is only 5.7, primarily because we have decelerated the growth in the state, but to some extent also because other players have accelerated growth here in Sao Paulo. So there is indeed a share loss. I think to some extent it's a self-fulfilling prophecy since we have decelerated growth here. But what I'd like to point out is that the magnitude of the share loss has been amplified by criteria adopted by IMS, which creates noise, and I'll show why on the next page. If you look here on page 6, and I'll focus here on the bottom of the page on the real growth, this chart depicts the annual growth at each quarter of Raia Drogasil when compared to the other large chains who are part of Abrafarma, and when compared to the total market. We can see that RD has been growing ahead of everybody, but Abrafarma, until this quarter, was growing almost in tandem, slightly ahead of the average of the market. This quarter, something very different happened. We see that Abrafarma also decelerated on a real basis, but the average of the market went up. Abrafarma, including RG, accounts for nearly 50% of the Brazilian pharmaceutical market. I think 45 or 46 to be precise. So if the average has accelerated, but the large chains are growing below, what this means is that the growth is coming from small chains and independents. But the problem here is that while large chains report real demand for Abrafarma every month, the data that the data that IMS captures for small chains independents is selling data from wholesalers. In April, IMS reported an unprecedented market growth of 17%. So in our view, there is a big selling pitch here distorting the numbers. I think in the next quarters, this should become clear, so we'll see how it happens. But obviously, there is share loss in Sao Paulo, mostly from the decision to decelerate our growth here, but to some extent also because we see competitors opening stores here. We can ask if those openings are sustainable or not. We have our opinion on that. Growing less here is a decision that comes from opportunities in other states. Seven, we highlight the revenue growth here. So we grew 11.6% the top line in the quarter. The retail operation grew 10.6%, while Forbio grew 36%. So Forbio keeps growing at a very fast pace and also with much better results as we have seen in this quarter, and I'll talk about them later. When you look category by category, the main highlight in OTC has been OTC, which has grown the share in the mix by 140 basis points. It's important to highlight that the switch from products that were previously branded RX and now have become OTC accounts for 40 bits out of the 140 bits. But still, despite that, OTC is doing really well. When we look at branded lost 70 bits, but 40 bits is due to the switches. So if you discount the switches, branded has been almost flat. It's only 30 bits pressure and has been in line with the previous quarters. Generics has grown only 3.4% in terms of revenues. But if you look at volume, the growth has been almost 14%, which I believe is a very good number. This reflects proactive investments by the company in terms of pricing and mix for generics to make us more competitive. This has been going on for a couple quarters. And the best thing is that we are investing in prices, but our margins are still constant because we have been able to have other commercial gains. We have been able to compensate some of those investments in regions and categories where we don't have pressure. So we are not in a contemplative mood in an environment like this. We are being very active in terms of managing the company and to respond to the environment that we have. In a couple quarters, when the comp base fades, when this comp base fades out, this volume growth in the scenario in generics will translate in revenue growth as well. So this is a good thing for us. Of the 11.6% consolidated revenue growth, 2.5% has come from the same store sales growth. Mature stores fell by 1.4%. There is a positive calendar effect of 60 bits in the quarter, but there is also a negative 60 bits seasonal effect from the World Cup. So in the end, seasonality and calendar, they net off. And the real impact is 1.4%. On page 9, we see the gross margin has fallen down by 30 bits. Out of the 30 bits, 20 bits relates to lower inflationary gains on inventories because the price increase this year was somewhat lower than last year. So it's a 20 bit impact for the quarter, but this is almost nothing when you look for the total year. So the structural, on a structural basis, the margin fell down by only 10 bits. There's also a 20 bit pressure from 4Bio. 4Bio has lower margins, so when it all grows retail, this will press gross margins down. But there's also 10 bits in other commercial gains that we have obtained. Finally, we see 1.7 days of cash cycle pressure, of which 1.4 are coming from receivables. The fact that the month ended in June increases the balance of receivables. So this should normalize the next quarter. On page 10, we can see that we're having pressure at the expense level. And this pressure doesn't relate to expansion efficiency. This is really the reflection of a loss of operating leverage. If our mature stores are failing 1.4, are going decreasing by 1.4%, there is less revenue to absorb the expenses. So the total expense pressure has been only 20 bps, but then we can break this down. So labor represents 30 bps of pressure, rental 10 bps, logistics 10 bps, and new store another 10 bps. So these pressures were mitigated by a G&A dilution of 30 bps and by dilution arising from the top line growth of 10 bps. So, all in all, on page 11, we see that our EBITDA amounted to 316.6 million in the quarter. This represents 5.2% nominal growth versus the same quarter last year, and this implies a margin loss of 50 bps. But it's important to mention that 20 bps relates to inflationary gain, lower inflationary gain on inventories. So the structural margin loss because of the revenue momentum has been only 30 bps, which I don't think it's a bad number considering how weak the top line has been. We see that if you consider only the 1,500 stores that we have in operation since the 2017, we would have seen here an EBITDA margin of 8.9%. So there is a pressure from the stores that shows in our numbers. The retail business did 8.6% of the EBITDA margin, and for buyers, 3.1% of the EBITDA margin. On page 12, net income amounted to 141.8 million, 2.8% nominal growth, and a net margin loss of 40 bps. This relates to the EBITDA margin pressure offset by taxes, but there's also a big important impact here from non-recurring expenses. We had 6 million in non-recurring expenses. We had basically almost 10 million of consulting expenses related to our strategic planning that takes place every 5 years. But there's also 3 million in tax credits from previous year, which is partially offsetting that non-recurring expense. On page 13, we see that the free cash flow has been very similar to the second quarter last year, 68 million negative, with a total cash flow of 154, also close to the 134 we saw in the second quarter last year. Any quarter, when we compare year to date, generally shows a negative picture because the fourth quarter is the best quarter in terms of working capital. So generally, Q1, 2, and 3, when you compare to Q4, there's a pressure. Q4 to Q4, then it's a more realistic figure. But we still believe there will be some pressure in terms of free cash flow. Finally, on page 14, you see the performance of the stock. So our shares have fallen 27% year to date versus a fall of 5% for the Bovespa. So obviously, when you look since the IPO, the cumulative gains are really steady. I'll now pass to Marcelo, and then I'll be back to provide some IR highlights and then for the Q&A. Thank you.
Okay, Eugenio, thank you. So just before the short-term achievements, I'll talk about a little bit about the results. We know how difficult it is to make good results when you have this momentum in sales, and we believe that we have a cycle for this quarter, maybe next quarter also. And we did a very, very good job in the past to increase the productivity in the stores. Even if we have this very good productivity in the store, we achieved the best number in our NPS number this quarter. It's very, very good for us. Let's talk about our short-term achievements. We entered in Pará. Pará is the fourth market in the north area. We put all the northeast and north areas together, okay? Our results start very, very good. We believe you can do the same result that we did in Recife, when we entered Recife. We have 20 stores to open until the end of this year. We put all the team to there. Maybe you can do the second player in this market very, very quickly. We are focusing on 80 customers again, okay? The other good thing is change our pricing strategy in general. This is good. We saw very, very good elasticity in price. and we preserve our gross margin, and we preserve also our total increase our average ticket sales. This is good for us, and it can bring for us more customers in the future. We start to accelerate our digital strategy. We put all the stores that they could click collect. The customer can buy by internet or for app or for in the site and can pick at the store. In 1 hour, the product is ready for the customer. This is doing very, very well. And this show for us that the customer is ready for the digitalization to start to make relationship with us using the app and using the internet also. And you start to work with Sunday delivery service in 15 capitals, and we believe this will be very, very important for the future. We are planning to put even more major cities in Brazil. We start the results of this quarter. We are very, very optimistic, and we know that our strategy is only long-term and create value in the long-term, okay? If you look at our sales, if you look for 2015, 50% of our sales made in São Paulo. Right in the end of this year, maybe less than 50% of sales made in São Paulo area. This proves that we set a national chain where the only player in this market that had a national chain help us to fight against the competition like a shared game, okay? City by city, territory by territory. Then our performance for the new store is still very, very strong. When we take the decision to open less stores in São Paulo, open more stores in the north and northeast, this helps with the results of the company, and you can see the same quality in your stores. You don't see the same quality in the competition. The competition is still have the stop and go strategies. So open a lot of stores and have products and try to return, okay? But this is very, very important for us in the long-term vision. The other thing that can help us is the generics. We studied a lot the other countries, and generics take a very, very good role in the helping the consolidation of the market. When it starts to decrease the price in generic, and you should be very smart to that, this can help us to bring some competition out of the market and help us to consolidate the market in the future also. Then, in spite of the results in this quarter, we are very confident that you have a great value in the company in the future. Right now, Eugenio will talk about the RI activities, and then I will be here for the answer.
So, first thing is, the date for the third quarter earnings release will be October 30th. And we have the party day for this year already scheduled. It will take place in São Paulo on October 11th in the same venue we did the last year, Vila Bizzucci, and it will start at 8 a.m. So obviously we always have a huge local attendance, but everyone who can make the commitment to come from the U.S. or Europe and be here, I think it will be worthwhile. And we are in the middle of a strategic planning process, and our idea is to provide some visibility on the strategy for the next 4 or 5 years during this event. So I would highly advise anyone who can make the effort of attending. And finally, we have 3 upcoming conferences in which we'll be presenting. So on August 22nd, we'll be at the healthcare checkup by JP Morgan in Sao Paulo, and then we have 2 conferences, one in Europe, one in the U.S. So September 10th to 12th will be in the Morgan Stanley Conference in London. It will be myself and Gabriel. And finally, November 13th and 14th, Martin and Gabriel will be presenting at the CEO Conference of Bradesco in New York. So now we're ready for your questions. Thank you very much.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone in order to ask a question, please press star 1 in your telephone keypad at this time. If you'd like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. Mr. Thiago Macruz from Itaú would like to make a question.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. You've mentioned that you don't envisage opening that many stores in São Paulo as you did in 2015 in the near term. Should I anticipate that that's something that you shouldn't do from now on, And if that's the answer to that question is yes, should I then think that you feel you're closer to your market share cap in the region of the state of São Paulo? And a follow-up to that question, guys, if you maintain your guidance for store openings this year and you're not depending so much on the region, on the São Paulo state, should I think that the vintage for this year should carry lower returns? Can you generate the same sort of return in other regions where Raia and Drogasil might not have their strongholds as you do in the region of the state of São Paulo? These are my two questions. Thank you very much.
Marcus, thank you for your questions. So the first thing is, as you can see from the number, quarterly numbers we provided, I mean, the things are in terms of decentralizing our growth out of São Paulo and into the region has been very natural and very progressive. I mean, there is no quick fix here. We didn't start today, we didn't stop a single day and say, hey, let's stop São Paulo and let's find some other place where it has been natural as our operations have been grown outside of São Paulo. And the other element here is that we saw, I think, over the last, from 5 years ago to 2 years ago, a huge window of opportunity to close, to occupy some white spaces, especially the city of São Paulo. So if you look at the number of stores we opened during this period in Moema, in Jardins, in all these regions, where we already had a reasonable presence, it was very big. So there wasn't a window of opportunity to take advantage of the market, to advance the position, and we did this with tremendous quality. Obviously, cannibalization is higher in this market, but the revenues per store we have obtained there have more than justified the investment that we made. But when we look today, the capacity to grow in São Paulo, I don't think the best space is the space we were able to do during that window of opportunity. So I think the current pace is probably more representative of what we'll be able to do in São Paulo from now on. In terms of share loss, it also depends on what the other competitors are doing. So yes, in the short term, it basically assumes there'll be share loss because there are more people opening stores. But in our view, the new entrants who are entering stores here, they are delivering stores who are not, the open stores who are not delivering, who will not be feasible. So I don't think this will continue over the longer term. And Drogaria São Paulo, I think, is doing a good expansion here. They take advantage of the same window of opportunity we saw 5 years ago. And so I think it makes sense for them, but I don't think they'll be able to maintain this space forever, as we were not able to maintain this space. So yes, I think the short term, this probably means we lose some share in São Paulo, but we're still opening a lot of stores here. I think competitive openings will reduce over time. So we believe that progressively we can gain more share in the state of São Paulo. And finally, when we look at these vintages, this is projecting around 20%. So this is very consistent with our long-term track record. Last year, it was ahead of the track record. I think we had the best year in 2017 in a five-year period. This year is a normal opening. It's not as stellar as it was last year, but it's absolutely in line with what we have done historically, and we're still seeing 19 to 20% IRR when we project these stores for the full maturation.
Thank you very much, guys. And if I may, just one follow-up question. Given this scenario that you just explained to us, does it make sense to think that maybe now it's time to pursue M&A, Eugenio? Do you think that some in specific regions where Raia and Drogasil have not been successful thus far, it would make sense to go after a regional player? Do you think that this is something we could see in the near term? That's my last question. Thank you very much.
Marcus, just before answering this question, just a follow-up on the previous question, we also ask that if growing outside of São Paulo means lower IR, and I say absolutely, an adamant way, no. Today, especially when we factor out cannibalization, many of these markets outside of São Paulo, especially when we are thinking about the north, northeast, and midwest, they offer the a higher IRR than in São Paulo. Because São Paulo has cannibalization. In those markets, cannibalization is still much lower. And for the last year or two, we also understand cannibalization better. This is one of the elements
that prompted us to reduce the openings in Sao Paulo. We have a better grasp of what sedimentation is. We are the only chain. There's not a single exception here. There's not a single other chain who can say that. We're the only chain who has 20 plus states where we can grow with 20% IR. Every other state in Brazil, they make money in the core market. They are able to grow profitably in their native market. Maybe in one or two states, they get it okay. But in the rest, it's generally a disaster because of high interest. Nobody can do what we're doing here without sacrificing IR. So this is really the testament to the fact that we have a national footprint and a national presence.
Anyway, what's important also, we are opening more than 200 stores every quarter group for the last 12 months, since the second quarter 2016. This is very difficult to do. I think the competition is doing more than stop and go strategy. We are doing the same strategy in the past. Then choose the place, the state that are put, the store is like a chess game that I told you. We have all the strategy to do this well. Then open less in São Paulo, more and more states, is only part of our strategy. It's not because barriers or competition. We know where we have a few of more consolidation in the market.
Yeah. And in terms of then going to the second question, when you look at the ambition that we have in terms of consolidating the market, I'm sure that at some point M&A will make sense for us. So we are not allergic to M&A, nothing like that. But the problem is that we have a huge quality bias. When you look around the market, there's a very small number of assets that has the underlying quality will be comfortable with. I think those assets are not available today. I think those assets are very expensive, so the day they are available, we have to be very comfortable in the value creation ability. So, yes, this will come to the picture eventually, but I don't think it's in the short term.
That's super clear, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Luciano Campos from Bradesco BBI would like to make a question.
Good afternoon, Eugenio. Good afternoon, Marcilio. My first question is actually about, this market share trend in the state of São Paulo. In one of the aspects that you also commented in the press release about the impact of the pricing decisions that you have made that also influenced your market share in the region. I think Marcilio was also explained that these pricing changes probably was more concentrated in the generics segment, if I understood correctly. Could you please elaborate a little bit more about, what was the strategy change in terms of prices that you did, if it is just São Paulo or if it's generalized, and a little bit more color on when it started. And the second part of this question is, for instance, if you already had time to observe what is the impact of that. Normally, if you are, more competitive in prices, you could see your market share reacting relatively fast. I would like to know if that was the case, if you can observe your market share kind of recovering in a store-by-store basis or anywhere, any basis that you can see that you can help us understand what is the impact of this strategy in the market share. Thank you. Those are the questions.
Luciano, thanks for the question. The first message here is, I don't think this is a quarter that when we look at IMS, we should spend a lot of time talking about share, because there's a lot of noise in this quarter. For example, IMS reported 17% revenue growth in April. I mean, there is no chance the market grew 17%. The fact that the large chains are maintaining the same pace they were having, or the same trend they were seeing through these quarters, but the overall market acceleration really shows that acceleration is taking place in the edge of the market. Small guys, small chains, independents who report sell-in data and not sell-out data. So this is a very noisy quarter. I think we'll have to wait for probably one or two more quarters. For next quarter, we can already have a more realistic picture of where the share is. But I would assume there is a share loss in São Paulo. The fact that we're growing less, the fact that our expansion share is much lower than it used to be, both first and foremost because we decided to decentralize over time, and second because there's also more activity, will probably mean a share loss in the short term, but not at these magnitudes. I think the work we're doing in terms of pricing, generic has been a key focus, but it's not the only focus. We have also invested prices in bandwidth, for example. When you look at a constant gross margin on a consolidated basis, it doesn't mean this is flat everywhere. At any given point in time, we optimize our prices. We're seeing the markets where we have to invest more, and we see the market, and we also look at the markets where we can harvest some margin to fund that. So this is a very dynamic thing. Obviously, with new entrants in São Paulo, we have reinvested over the last 2 years in São Paulo. We are increasing entry barriers. We are defending our market share here. It's very difficult to predict where this is going, how fast the share can go up. But the fact that we saw a 13% volume growth in generics in such a sudden way, I think it's a very good indicator of the elasticity that Marcelo was mentioning.
Just to confirm, so it's too early to observe like May, June, and July. You don't see any particular trend already associated with, you know, in terms of market share change relative to this price strategy. It's too early. Is that what you're saying?
It's too early, and there's too much noise in the data.
Yeah.
So it's both. I'm not here to also criticize IMS. It's important that this is their methodology is the only possible methodology. There is no way that they can talk to 80,000 pharmacies and that they will provide them the monthly demand. So what they do is the large chains inform them, the small chains they capture through wholesalers. So but the thing is, there's noise in the base. It's very difficult to look at IMS quarter over quarter, but generally when you look year over year, you see a reasonable picture. This time, because of this huge selling peak in April, I think even the year-on-year reading is compromised. But it's an intrinsic limitation to the only way I can capture data. I think in the next quarter, I think we will get to normal visibility again.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Mr. Joseph Giordano from JP Morgan Bank would like to pose a question.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. I have like a couple questions here. So the first one is still like on this generic pricing. I'd like to understand here, like how have you been changing your supplier's base in order to maintain your margins relatively flat, or if this comes from basically better procurement terms. And then looking at the cost cut initiatives, last year we had like several themes, so like changes in salary plan, renegotiation of salaries, some strategic layoffs. So here, I'd like to understand if we have like any initiative here that is worth highlighting to kind of cushion potential operating deleverage pressures into the second half of the year. As per my understanding, it seems that growth remains a little bit challenging in the more mature markets, given competition. Thank you.
Joseph, thanks for the question. I mean, in terms of generics, we have here a combination of things. One thing that I didn't mention that also affects generic pricing is that there have been price cuts in the Farmacia Popular program that happened in the past. And Farmacia Popular is very focused on generics. So this is a one-off price cut. And we also, because of that price cut, we also did an auction with our supplier. So there is some movement in the supply base. There are some suppliers selling more to us than before. There are other suppliers selling less to us than they were selling before. There's also the fact that in more popular areas, we're also adopting cheaper generics than before. In regions where we have new entries, we have also increased the discounts in terms of not allowing someone to build a price gap versus us. So there's a lot of movement going on. It didn't start this quarter. It started before. It's also not confined to generics. As I mentioned before, we have invested in branded discounts in São Paulo. But the great thing is that either because of better generic purchasing terms as a result of the auction, or because we can harvest margins in markets where we probably were more aggressive than necessary, we have been able to do all the required investment to defend our position without sacrificing the gross margin. In terms of the expenses, I mean, obviously, last year we did a lot of things. Those initiatives were very important. We're always looking for opportunities, so there are minor things here and there, but we don't have any opportunities like we had last year. We are very disciplined on the G&A side. We're very careful about that. But the message is we think long term. We are not here to optimize this for the next quarter or to optimize the team. We need to make what makes sense and what creates value on the longer term. So we are not taking people out of the store just because we have to make the quarterly data. That's not how we work. We will give people the store when we have productivity gains that allow us to do so. If we don't have another product, we're always seeking productivity gains. But if we don't have a productivity gain, we can't force the headcount number down. Because if we do, we'll be very happy in the next quarter. But I'll start selling my shares. Because it's not sustainable. There's a limit to that.
Yes. Yes. Every process, right, changes in expense, looking for any bad. Okay, we are here for the customer, to serve the customer well. If you compare our numbers with people in the store, like the competition, we have much more productivity than competition. We stay to watch with this saying and prepare the people for the future. But you can, it's impossible to see big change in this number we saw in 2016-17.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, any consolidation process involves pain. I mean, if you look at the U.S. over the 90s, I mean, all business events were under a huge margin pressure from payers. When you look 20 years later, I mean, they own the market. They boosted their revenues. They boosted their market cap. So life is not a straight line. I always talk about that. The only place a straight line exists is in financial models. And consolidation involves pain. This kind of market scenario in which we have a lot of players doing unsustainable growth. We have a lot of leverage players in the market. We have more competition and we have a market deceleration. I mean, it's a perfect market to start cleaning up. Whatever can stretch us will kill a lot of players before. So I think this will be a very difficult environment for the other players. Last quarter, I told you guys that to expect a bloodshed when our competitors started reporting. And it's the same thing. I mean, we have some margin loss. I think it's minor. But when you look at the numbers that our competitors will report, I expect a very dark scenario.
One follow-up question here, if I may, on the productivity side. Remember, like, there were several efforts here with the data lake related to the CRM data to basically improve pricing, right? So in theory, like in the past, this was an expectation for a major cross margin driver. Here in this context, like what I would like to understand here is if this new pricing algorithm and system is already in place, and that's actually what's bringing you like an edge in terms of competitive positioning to maintain like minimal share losses in the more mature markets here, right? So basically preserve returns. Thank you.
I would say that to some extent this is already happening. I mean, we rolled out pricing for HPC, a pricing platform for HPC and HPC. We have much bigger segmentation across stores and regions than before. We do way more detailed price surveys of competitors. So obviously that we have been adjusting the prices based on that. But the fact that we have a platform already rolled out doesn't mean that we're using every resource the platform offers to the fullest extent. I think there's still a learning curve on that. In our strategic project now with Bain, one of the things we analyze is how to use machine learning, for example, to improve pricing. So I think this is a journey. I think, yes, it helps us invest in more competitive prices in some places, especially in São Paulo, while we still defend the overall gross margin. So this is a direct reflection of the pricing platform and also of our buying power. But this is a journey. This will keep happening more and more and more.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As a reminder, as to ask a question, please press star 1. This will be the final announcement. In order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. It appears to be no further questions. Now I will turn the conference back to the companies for their final remarks.
Okay, so first of all, I'd like to thank you all for attending this call. Thank our long-term shareholders for their ongoing trust and support. And I also to stress some of the messages that we discussed today. So the first thing is that this was indeed a disappointing quarter for us. We are in a difficult growth scenario because of the market deceleration. And I think this will last for a couple more quarters. We believe the third quarter will be another difficult quarter because last year was a very good quarter in terms of expense dilution. So probably we have the toughest comp base in a very long time in terms of expansion. And I don't think the sales momentum will be any different from what we have seen this year. But as we approach the fourth quarter, then we start becoming more hopeful because I think we have a manageable expense comp base. We have also a slightly easier revenue comp base, and we believe that some of the actions that we are taking should maybe already showing some results. So I don't know if we're able to stabilize margins in the fourth quarter, but to the very least, we'd like to close the gap in the fourth quarter and position us for a better 2019. As I mentioned in the call, just because consolidation will be good in the longer term, and consolidation is painful, and the market is accelerating, it doesn't mean we are in a contemplative mood. We are not at all in a contemplative mood. We are making, and it hasn't started today, very meaningful investments in prices, and looking state by state, city by city, neighborhood by neighborhood, category by category, product by product. And these gains and these investments have been, they're very important. They are funded by other gains in pricing, in buying terms, for example. So the 14% volume growth in generics is a great indicator of the success of that strategy. And after a couple of quarters, I think the volume growth will translate in revenue growth. So I think we are on the right track here. And another thing is that we have, as I mentioned, decentralized significant expansion. Only one third happened in Sao Paulo, and it didn't happen this quarter. This has been an evolving process for the last 2 years that has naturally happened. This is not a quick fix. And we're the only chain in Brazil who is able to decentralize the growth and still maintain great and consistent returns because we have a very profitable national presence. Wherever we grow, we make money, and when you look at some of the markets where we're growing, like Salvador, Recife, Fortaleza, now in the Lane, in the Midwest, even in Rio, we're growing with very, very consistent returns when you compare to Sao Paulo. So decentralizing doesn't mean sacrificing returns. It's probably even the opposite, because growth in Sao Paulo now involves a lot of cannibalization, and I always have to manage that. Growth in this market has a much bigger greenfield component versus when we do in Sao Paulo. I also like to stress the huge progress we have achieved in omnichannel. So today is the day in which 100% of our store base is part of our click and collect network. So no other retailer in Brazil has 1,700 stores with click and collect available. And I'm not referring to my sector. I'm referring to any retailing sector. We are the largest click and collect chain in retailing in Brazil today, and we see very positive trends behind that. We believe the future will involve this digitalization. The store will still remain very important, and I think click and collect is the best example of that. It's a customer who's taking advantage of technology to take some of the pain points away of his purchase experience, but is still relying on the convenience of the store. So this is a great thing. We have a myriad of markets in which we also have local delivery, and this is the year in which our omnichannel strategy that has been in the works for at least 3 to 5 years, we started to surface. So today, and I mean this very day, is the day that the last stores
are joining the Citizen Collect Network. So this is positioning us very well to take advantage of that. And this is a journey. There's a lot more to do in terms of leveraging technology to improve customer experience, to improve our profitability, and a lot of that. And I think, again, our expansion keeps delivering. We just see huge opportunity. And the next quarters will show where our market share really is, because this quarter is the dynamic data is very noisy. So we remain highly optimistic about the opportunities we have and about our future. As I said before, this environment, it's analog to a bitter medicine. It's not nice to swallow, but it's good for you, because I think the competitive landscape in 2 years will be completely different than what it is today. I don't think every competitor will be around 2 years from today. I think several competitors will still be around, will be weakened. We see players reduce expansion very sharply. We can see players who are in the industry today, maybe they won't be part of our industry in 2 years. So, I mean, obviously I could be wrong, but you can write down that. I believe that 2 years is a completely different market scenario. Expansion is cyclical. So a lot of the increases that we are seeing from other players, they are not sustainable, and because they're not sustainable, they won't be happening forever. I mean, even players who are capitalized, at the end of the day, they're rational, and they want a return for the investment they do. So I'd like to thank you again for joining this call, and for a long time, shareholders, for your ongoing support. And we'll remain available to you here through conference calls, or by meeting at investor conference and workshops. Thank you very much.
Closing and disconnection.